Good afternoon. My name is Christelle, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Afghanistan Update conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you, Ms. Emmerling. You may begin your conference.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for joining us on this call today. My name is Susie Emmerling. I'm on the communications team here. I'm going to give you my contact information in case you have any questions to follow up after the call. My phone number is 202-481-8224, and my email is semmerling@americanprogress.org. Today we'll be discussing the statement that the Center for American Progress issued on Wednesday on the upcoming decision in Afghanistan by President Obama. And we have on the line today our CAP experts, Brian Katulis, Lawrence Korb, and Caroline Wadhams. To start, I'd like to turn it over to Caroline Wadhams.
Hi, everyone. I'm going to just quickly talk about the statement, and then I'll turn it over to Larry and Brian. As everybody knows, President Obama is going to release his strategy tomorrow evening. And we just wanted to, this past week, basically make a set of recommendations on what we think definitely needs to be included in that strategy. We're seeing that most likely he's going to add about 30,000 more troops. He's going to expedite the training of security forces, of Afghan security forces. He's going to probably expand the relationship with Pakistan. But we wanted to stress five key points that we believe Congress needs to demand from the president, and to until they get a clear set of objectives and implementation strategy from Obama with accompanying metrics. And I'm going to tell you about these five points that we think need to be included. Funding should not move forward until these elements are included in President Obama's strategy. The five elements we think need to be included, and I'm sure you've seen them in the statement, is one, President Obama needs to establish a flexible time frame for the withdrawal of U.S. troops. Two, the mission cannot just be a U.S. mission. It has to have, it has to be an international mission. That international flavor, the NATO lead must be part of any strategy moving forward. Third, Pakistan must continue to be pressed to battle extremists within its borders. If we don't deal with the safe havens in Pakistan, more troops will not help the situation, nor will anything else for that matter. Fourth, improving governance in Afghanistan and demanding internal reforms are essential for any successful strategy moving forward. And fifth, Obama needs to present a plan for how this war is going to be funded. I'm going to quickly talk about the international mission, the international nature of the mission that we think needs to be part of the strategy and the governance, and then I'm going to turn it over to Larry and Brian. It is clear that we cannot do the mission in Afghanistan alone, and we shouldn't have to. The security interests in Afghanistan don't just affect the United States, but they threaten the globe, and we should not be asked to bear the burden alone, especially in the midst of our own economic crisis and the demands we have around the world. We can't do it. We can't afford it, and we shouldn't have to. And you know, in Afghanistan, more than 43 countries are contributing to the NATO mission. We have strong international partners, and we need to stress maintaining those relationships. The support for the Afghanistan mission is declining, not just in the United States, but around the world. You have Canada saying they want to get out, 2011, Netherlands, 2010, Germany. There's the support for the mission is rapidly declining. Obama needs to make sure that he's constantly reaching out to our allies, that he's making steps to assuage their concerns. That there's consultation. The international nature of this mission is crucial. And on the governance piece, we've been talking about this incessantly. This is in the media and elsewhere, but clearly, if you just send 30,000 more troops into Afghanistan and you don't address the governance problems, the issues with corruption, then it's not going to help. There are huge problems, as everyone knows, with corruption. It's ranked, Transparency International just ranked Afghanistan as the second most corrupt country in a perceptions poll. But the majority of the Afghan people continue to see their government as a predatory, corrupt, and they possess few levers in which to hold their officials accountable. And this corruption manifests itself in insidious ways. Public officials, police, and police bribe Afghans for basic services. Personal property and land are seized without cause. Public positions are sold, and more. The international community bears some responsibility for this, and we can't just blame it on Karzai. We have poured aid into Afghanistan without sufficient monitoring or accountability. We've continued to support the reentrenchment of abusive warlords into the system. And we need to make this a priority to root the corruption out. And then finally, as part of this, the justice issue is key. The Taliban has been incredibly effective at gaining support of Afghan communities by appealing to people's grievances over the lack of justice. The Taliban has set up mobile courts. They've served to mediate people's disputes. This absence has really hurt the international effort and needs to be prioritized. I'm now going to turn it over to Brian, and then Larry will go from there. Thank you.
Thanks, Caroline. This is Brian Katulis, senior fellow at the center. Just one really quick point. And first, I'm speaking to you from Europe, so I think it's important to stress one of the Caroline's points of President Obama's challenge. One of his main challenges is to appeal to our allies in Europe, and I think you'll hear this in the speech tomorrow night, to do more, to contribute more. It's a point that NATO Secretary General Rasmussen has been making, and as I'm sitting here in Europe taking part in a conference, it strikes me that this is going to be a major challenge. But the main point I wanted to stress is the importance of Pakistan and having a much clearer focus on Pakistan. I'm not sure how much President Obama will talk about this in the speech tomorrow night, but it's key to the challenge. As General McChrystal's report, his assessment from earlier this year, from August, Afghanistan's insurgency is clearly supported from Pakistan. It said it quite clearly. We all know about the Quetta Shura Taliban, the problems with the Haqqani network. And Pakistan is one of the most complicated challenges that we face. I was looking at the recent events, and over the past 9 months, essentially, there have been, on average, one senior U.S. official traveling to Islamabad nearly every 10 days or every 2 weeks. In the last month alone, we had the CIA director, Leon Panetta, National Security Advisor Jim Jones, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. So this is an administration that understands the importance of Pakistan, and there have been some press reports, I understand, back in the States about a possible expanded strategic partnership and a letter from President Obama to President Zardari. When Larry and I returned from Pakistan with one of our colleagues, Colin Cookman, earlier this year, one of the recommendations we made was to develop a much more structured strategic framework agreement between the U.S. and Pakistan. And working this issue will be extremely important. It's very difficult for two challenges, for two reasons. One, the internal divisions between the Pakistanis, not only the divisions between the security establishment and the civilian leadership, but also the challenges of leadership and the disputes among the civilian leaders in Pakistan. And then second, you know, Pakistan is a major challenge because our leverage, quite frankly, is not that strong. Earlier this year, we tripled non-military assistance to Pakistan with the expectation that this carrot would be greeted and could be used to shape this relationship, and there was an uproar and complaints about conditions. Another challenge with the development assistance is that we simply haven't been able to deliver previous tranches of money. $750 million we approved in 2007 did not get to the people in Fatah. So it's Pakistan is an enduring challenge. I'm not certain how much President Obama will speak publicly about this. I think he'll mention it. but it's very much a work in progress, and I think we need to keep a focus on it. I'll turn it over to Larry now.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Caroline. Let me make a couple of comments on two of the things about setting a timeline and paying for this. It's important, I think, to keep in mind a couple of things. President Obama's already doubled the number of troops in Afghanistan. People think that this is his first attempt to deal with this situation. The fact of the matter, he has already doubled it. And if he adds another 30 or so thousand troops, you're going to have about 100,000 Americans and 40 to 50,000 troops from other countries. I think it's important to set a timeline. You can make it flexible, but you need to have goals for a couple of reasons. One, if we do not do that, we're going to be seen like the British and the Soviets as occupiers. And I think we need to get that message out that we're not there as occupiers. The next is we need to give the Afghanistan security forces and the president an incentive to basically get their act together. And what we think as a realistic goal is that within a year, Afghan forces should take the lead in particular areas of the country. And then within 4 years, they really ought to have the lead in all the combat operations. Now, this doesn't mean we're out completely, but it means that we get the majority of our combat forces out of the place. President Karzai himself has talked about, 5 years, but I think we really need to make that a goal and stick to it unless the situation really changes dramatically. The second is that right now the United States is spending, close to $4 billion a month in Afghanistan. If you add these troops that people are talking about, you're going to get close to about $6 trillion. I think personally, and we've written about this several times here, that it's been a disgrace that we fought these two extended conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan without paying for them. And I think it's time to stop that now. This is the first extended conflict we've ever fought where we basically borrowed money. People forget that in Lyndon Johnson's last year in office, he actually balanced the federal budget, and this was at the height of the war in Vietnam. And I think if we do this, it would not only be fiscally sound, but it would get the American people to realize that they have a stake in this. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to raise taxes. You can do as Lyndon Johnson did during the war in Vietnam. There are a lot of programs in the baseline defense budget that you can go after. Things like the Virginia-class submarine, the V-22 Osprey, no need to rush the Joint Strike Fighter and the future combat system. So there are ways that you can get the money out of the baseline budget. But I think it's important, and I can't stress this too much, that we don't continue to accumulate more debt and borrow more money to deal with this situation. I'll stop there now, and I guess it's time to turn it over for questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. We will pause for a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Sue Fleming with Reuters.
Yes, hi. You mentioned this figure of $6 trillion. Can you be a bit more specific on that and break that down a little bit? And the Afghans are talking of 3 to 5 years for having the security passed on to them. Do you think 3 years is a realistic sort of target?
Well, it's I didn't say trillion. I said $1 billion. We've actually spent close to $1 trillion on both wars. Okay. So I apologize if I did say that. No, I think it is realistic. Don't forget, we've been there for 8 years, and yes, we haven't been doing what we should have, but we have been training the forces. I think it's important that we've increased the goal to get 134,000 or so Afghan army people done by the end of this year rather than waiting till 2014. President Obama has already sent more trainers in, and I assume in this next package he'll have more. So I think it is realistic. Again, it's important to keep in mind what we're talking about here. You know, it's hard to get the exact number of people in the Taliban, but you're talking maybe tops about 20,000. So if you have American forces and as the Afghan forces begin to step up, you can, I think, it would be realistic to do it. And that's why we said, you know, they should be in the lead within within 4 years.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Richard Fisk with New York Daily News.
Any estimates on how long it would take to get the troops deployed, however many the president decides upon tomorrow night, all hearing in the range of 30,000. And also, Larry, with in a sense of a timetable, a drawdown, do you see something happening where they might be able to point to, if not an actual drawdown, at least an end of a surge here, something that they could claim of an end game in sight?
Okay, Rich, on your first question, again, the problem is not just the troops, and you do have a problem because we haven't started the drawdown in Iraq yet. The big drawdown is going to come after the election. The other is the facilities for them. And from what I understand, you're talking, if he goes 30 to 35,000, it's going to take a year to get all of those troops over there. And then, of course, on your second point, yeah, if as the Afghan forces begin to take control of, you know, whether we put them out in the West, for example, where we've got, you know, roughly about 4,400 troops, that would enable us then to, you know, to begin to take ours down. And I think that's the way to do it. But your question is well done. It's very easy to say, well, we're going to send 30,000 more troops. Well, you have to have facilities for them. You have to basically be able to provide support for them. So my guess is you will see you know, probably some 9,000 to 10,000 Marines go right away, but the rest are going to take at least a year. And the big influx will come next spring as we draw down in Iraq.
Can I add one thing to that? It looks like from the leaks, this is Caroline Wadhams, that Obama is probably going to try to do this in phased deployments and demand certain reforms as he deploys, so that it will give him, doing it in phases will give him added leverage to demand reforms in other areas, such as maybe the appointment of the cabinet or the some of the issues with corruption, or potentially, you know, demanding constitutional reform or whatever he decides to demand on the political side.
Your next question comes from the line of Sarah Stockman with Boston Globe.
I don't know if Brian is still on the line, but I was curious, when you're talking about an expanded strategic partnership with Pakistan, what does that look like? I mean, given that they basically, you know, were supposed to be working on the border with Pakistan, and then they withdrew from these outposts without even informing the Pakistanis. I mean, what are we talking about when we're talking about an expanded strategic partnership?
Well, yeah, I'm still on here. How you doing, Farah? It's what I think is in discussion is not just on, you know, coordinating on different tactics, but actually, if you look at the secretary's trip, and I think you were on that, there have been discussions about a wide range of issues to move beyond this notion of just Pakistan being a transactional relationship, you know, that we use them. I think the formulation I've heard in Pakistan is that we send them money and we tell them to do things, and to expand the relationship to the sorts of things that I think you saw in the SFA between the U.S. and Iraq, which has yet to be implemented, but to have a much more expanded bilateral relationship on a wide range of issues. And I think this is part of the strategy. Not just the mill-to-mill cooperation, which I think there's always room for improvement there, as well as the intel, but also the, you know, the notion of exchanges, energy cooperation, I think is one component of this. And I think the worry that some people had when the Kerry-Lugar bill was passed was that sending more money without a much more structured bilateral relationship could actually not yield tangible results. Is that clear?
Sure. So exchanges, you mean, you know, exchanges of people, energy cooperation, water, that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, very to send the message, and I think this is one thing the administration has talked about, is calibrating its tone with the Pakistani leadership and investing in a wider range of actors, not having the Musharraf problem again, where we were seen to be almost wholly dependent on one or two leaders, but having a broader contact with the Pakistani society, if you will. And I think that was the attempt of Kerry Lugar, but you saw the uproar and the reaction to that. And I think these issues aren't solved overnight, but I think it can be worked if we continuously, you know, try to develop expanded contacts in Pakistan.
I mean, can I just follow up quickly? Because it seems like one thing people are not talking about is the risks of destabilizing Pakistan. I mean, we could definitely do that by adding more fuel to the fire. That you know, now we're seeing daily bombings there, and it just seems like the society, there's only so much that society can take.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people are actually talking about that. Pakistanis are, and I think it'll be interesting to see the reaction. You know, I'm going to be looking closely at what the Pakistani reaction is to the Obama speech, because they've expressed those concerns to us on our visits there, the Pakistani leadership, about the prospect of an Afghanistan surge pushing the insurgency deeper into Pakistan, and that's, I think, a very delicate balancing act. But it goes back to the point of the need to work, you know, on both sides of the border in an integrated strategy. And I think, you know, one of the main points there, though, is that this is one of the trickiest things because it requires dealing with a multitude of different actors inside of Pakistan, and many of whom have a different threat perception.
Just one thing. This is Caroline Wadhams. I think that the point about destabilizing Pakistan is really important. I just want to add one thing to that, and that is I think the insurgency has been very, very skilled at propaganda, and I think they will inevitably use the announcement of an increase in troop levels to make the case again and again that this is a foreign occupation, that Karzai is a puppet, and they will galvanize more people. And I think the perceptions of this being of the resentment towards the foreign occupier, I think that's increasing, and it's dangerous for their recruiting purposes. And that's why I think it's so important that we continue to talk about, you know, we're not going to be there forever. This, you know, there on the other, you know, of course, on the other side, people say, well, then Pakistan isn't going to agree to cooperate with us because they think we're about to leave. But you do. But the narrative that is being put forward by the insurgency is also very dangerous in the sense of that we want to occupy and rule them forever. And I think we have to be really careful about the messaging.
Thanks.
Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. Your next question comes from the line of Mitch Potter with Toronto Star.
Yes, thank you very much. Question for Caroline and the whole of the panel, actually. Caroline, when you went through your list of countries observing declining support and timetables for withdrawal, you did mention Canada, the Netherlands, and you talked a little bit about Germany. I'd like to ask you if you can give an assessment of what the diplomatic price is for the first country that might withdraw. And sort of as an addendum to that, what would you say to the Canadian people? The article I'm writing is for a Canadian audience. What would you say to them after the very hard, long slog Canadian soldiers have had in Kandahar province? To try and shore them up and continue making this commitment.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult. I mean, I think that one of the main things that needs to be done is people around the world and in Canada, but everywhere, including the United States, they need to hear why it's important. And I don't think leaders in the United States and elsewhere have made a compelling case about why we need to be there and why the stakes are so high that we remain in Afghanistan. The Al-Qaeda narrative that was used after 9/11 no longer works for current audiences. They need to understand what happens to regional stability if the international community walks away, and what happens in terms of the humanitarian consequences. I think that case really needs to be made much more clearly. But also, the Canadians have suffered tremendously, and they have really taken on too much of the burden, not compared to the United States, but compared to many other countries. And to the Canadian audience, that feels unfair, and that's completely understandable. So I think other countries, the U.S. needs to just continue to demand that other countries step forward. The U.K. has said they will give another 500 troops. Other countries have supposedly, according to the leaks, there may be an additional 6,000 troops that are provided to the mission. If the Canadians and others hear that other people are putting forward more of a contribution, then it will make their staying there more tenable to them. But it's clearly very, very difficult.
Yeah, Mitch, this is Larry Korb. Let me tell you exactly what I told your government last year when I was up there. First of all, we need to apologize to the Canadians and the other Europeans who, when we told were coming in, we basically said, you know, all the combat was over and we just wanted you for, you know, reconstruction and development. That certainly was not true. Second, we need to apologize to the fact that we ignored it for so long. When 2 years ago, and when you were suffering a lot of casualties, we only had something like 16,000 Americans there because we were distracted by Iraq and had underestimated the difficulties. I think the third thing is that it's not just going to be us that'll ask you to stay. It's got to be the British. And I think, you know, Gordon Brown has been terrific on this, talking about, telling the Pakistanis, you know, basically, why haven't you got bin Laden? It's been 8 years since he's been up there and, you know, leaning on Karzai. So hopefully I think those things will help. And then finally, we are making a commitment. As I mentioned, Obama has already doubled the number of American troops there since he's come into office. And if he does another 30,000 or so, that will mean he's tripled the number of troops. And more importantly, even before this latest surge, he's tripled the number of combat battalions. I mean, people forget that. We've gone, you know, very high in combat battalions. So I think all of those things, and then hopefully you can also get the new NATO Secretary General, who I think has also been terrific on this, to explain that it's not for the United States that you're doing it, it's for your own security and the future of NATO.
Thank you. And just to touch on the other point I made, I suppose for all the international community, can you try and assess the diplomatic price that might be paid for any partner who just decides it's untenable and for domestic political reasons they just need to leave despite everything?
Brian, Larry, anyone else? Anyone have thoughts on that? I don't know what the diplomatic price would be. I think that the Bush administration put a lot of pressure on our allies, and it didn't work. And Obama has to be much more. He has to, I think, take much more concrete steps in the way that he's appealing to these audiences. But I'm not sure that at this point it's going to do anyone any good to threaten with consequences if they withdraw. It has to be shown to be in everybody's self-interest. I can't imagine that Obama will be threatening to cut off aid or sanction countries, but I don't know.
And again, remember, there's going to be a new international conference in January, and hopefully then, you know, the international community could do it. But we can't. I mean, I think the Canadians have done fantastic, and I think on a per capita basis, they've had more casualties, I know, than us in just about any country.
Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Paul Richer with the Los Angeles Times.
Yes, I have two questions. First, I'd like to ask Carolyn on this issue of the phased deployment. Is it really realistic to think that Obama would deny additional troops to the Afghan government if they failed to meet certain governance benchmarks? It's hard for me to imagine that happening. Secondly, I'd like to ask all members of the panel their thoughts about how Obama will tomorrow square the circle and offer an exit strategy that that goes just far enough but not too far.
On the first question, on the phased deployment question, whether it's realistic, I don't know. I mean, my sense is that if you don't start cleaning up the governance problems, then the troop levels are not going to help the situation. And I hope that Obama recognizes if you pour more troops into protecting a government that continues to be perceived as predatory and abusive, then we are really in trouble. So, you know, we'll have to see how Obama has talked a lot about the needs for governance reform, and they have talked about different officials have talked implied that that aid would not be forthcoming if these reforms don't take place. We will have to see whether that rhetoric is actually will be taken seriously as we move forward. I hope that around troops is where we actually have leverage, and so we have to use, I think, and I hope the Obama administration thinks that we use this the troop levels as leverage to demand what we actually. To actually focus on the sources of this insurgency related to corruption and justice, et cetera. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, this is Larry. Paul, let me add a couple of things. Going back to the question that Rich Zisk asked me before, you're not going to be able to get all the troops right away because of the facilities that you need. So that does give him some leverage. And in the final analysis, you're going to have to leave some time. And if the government hasn't cleaned up its act, it really doesn't matter if you don't have a government that's perceived as legitimate. And the American people and their elected representatives are not going to allow their sons and daughters to continue to go and die and be wounded for a government that, doesn't move in the right direction. So I think he does have the leverage, and I think that basically he will use it because it's in our interest. And if, in fact, Karzai perceives, as, you know, he gave that one interview, which he since retracted, where he said, well, you know, you're just here for yourself rather than for us. If he, you know, has that perception, we're in an awful lot of trouble. And so I do think he does. He will have the leverage.
Oh, and your second question was on the exit strategy. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
How he can balance between lack of specifics and then sending a message for exit. Is that, did I understand it correctly?
Yes. I mean, it seems like he's not going to want to be too specific. I mean, they've already indicated he's not going to set out kind of timeline that we have for Iraq. So
yeah.
How does he convey to war-weary Americans that we are leaving without going too far? What might he say?
Well, I think he's already offered some hints of what he might say. I think in some of the interviews he did when he returned or even when he was in Asia, he talked about not handing this off to his successor. And I'm presuming he's he's presuming a two-term presidency, as I understand, you know, as they're thinking in terms of timeline. So I think he'll give a notional timeline and talk about perhaps the middle of next decade, and that's just a guess. I would be surprised that if President Karzai's statement, where he outlined a certain notional timeline, I would be surprised if that was not coordinated with what the White House is about to issue. But I think the fact of the matter is that he understands that the clock is ticking, and that in reality, if they don't have a sense of progress or upward movement by next summer, and they've said this publicly from the administration, I think it becomes just politically untenable and then also strategically unwise to continue to stay on the same course there. So there's a very real clock ticking. He won't talk about this in the speech, but the real timeline, I think, that everybody's at is trying to get at least a sense of a foothold, some progress by next summer. Otherwise, you're looking at a very, I think, ugly political situation here at home.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Presenters, there are no further questions.
Thank you, everyone. I'd like to thank Dr. Korb, Mr. Katulis, and Ms. Wadhams for enlightening us on their on Obama's upcoming decision on Afghanistan. Again, my contact information is 202-481-8224 or semerling@americanprogress.org. Also, we will post the full audio of this call on our website along with the statement. So if you want to look on our homepage, you should be able to find the audio within the next couple of hours. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.